Good morning with KUAC News. I'm Dan Bross. Both of Alaska's U.S. senators are taking issue with President Trump's remarks in Helsinki, Finland yesterday. Alaska Public Media reports that Republicans Lisa Murkowski and Dan Sullivan are critical of the president's questioning of a U.S. intelligence assessment that found Russia meddled in the 2016 election. Senator Murkowski, in a written statement, said she was, quote, stunned Trump didn't take the opportunity at the press conference to confront Putin. She says Trump instead validated the Russian leader by giving credence to his denial of involvement. In his own written statement, Senator Sullivan says the U.S. intelligence community is obviously more credible than Putin, whom Sullivan called a, quote, mafia regime leader. A natural gas supply proposal from Siemens and Kinnick-Otnu Corporation is a safer, less expensive option for the interior gas utility. That's the message from officials with the partnered companies that want to supply the IGU with liquefied natural gas. The IGU's current plan is to expand its Titan LNG production plant on Cook Inlet to increase output of gas at trucks to Fairbanks. Speaking in Fairbanks yesterday, Kinnick-Otnu Corporation President Tom Harris says buying gas from the Kinnick Area Native Corporation and Siemens would save the interior gas utility the cost of expanding the Titan plant.
I don't look at Siemens as a competing interest. They're a completing interest. There is not the capacity at Titan to meet the demand today.
Harris says Kinnick-Otnu has a proven coal bed methane resource of gas on corporation land, where the companies plan to install LNG production facilities. He emphasizes that the property is along the Alaska Railroad tracks, providing a cheaper, safer transportation alternative to increasing daily LNG truck traffic out of South Central.
The last thing we want to see is 50 trucks of LNG coming up Kinnick Goose Bay Road, going north, and 50 trucks coming back empty on a road that's already killing so many people because it's overcrowded.
Siemens proposes using scalable gas processing modules to begin supplying Fairbanks with LNG as early as 2019. Kinnick-Otnu and Siemens officials are giving a presentation on their gas supply proposal tonight in Fairbanks. The public event hosted by Citizens for Clean Air is at 7 p.m. at Raven Landing. The filing period for candidates running for local government seats in the cities of Fairbanks and North Pole and the Fairbanks North Star Borough opened yesterday. As KUEC's Robin reports, a few candidates filed immediately.
Borough Clerk April Trickey had a candidate for borough mayor and one for each of three borough assembly seats filed before noon Monday.
I think we have some enthusiastic people that were definitely wanting to get their name in the hat at the very beginning.
Bryce Ward, the outgoing mayor of North Pole, filed to run for borough mayor. Sam Tuck, Jeffrey Rensel, and Leah Berman-Williams filed to run for borough assembly. The filing period is open until the end of the month. In addition to borough mayor and the three open assembly seats, there are two vacant seats on the Board of Education and two on the Interior Gas Utility Board. The City of Fairbanks and the City of North Pole both have three open seats on their respective city councils, and North Pole is also electing a new mayor in October. On Monday, Thomas McGee filed to run for mayor of North Pole. It's a bit more complicated for that city, as they're already down one councilperson after Sharon Heading resigned, and City Clerk Judy Binkley says North Pole needs to fill that seat immediately to finish out Heading's term. They are taking applications from qualified residents until noon on this Friday, July 20th, and will fill the seat within days.
Next Monday, so the 23rd, I have a special meeting, and that's when council will interview any of the qualified applicants, and then that night I'm going to request that they make a decision, and whoever they appoint to fill this vacancy, I'm going to swear in that night.
Whoever the North Pole City Council appoints to fill out that term would be eligible to run as an incumbent in October. In Fairbanks, I'm Robin.
Salter Fair organizers have canceled this year's event. As KUEC's Tim Ellis reports, Salter Fair Association board members say they're still paying old bills for the fair last held in 2016.
Salter Fair Association Board President Christina Abel says when she and the other eight new members of the board took over in late April, they soon realized they wouldn't be able to bring the fair back this year because of problems left over by the previous board.
There were bills that needed to be paid and back taxes, and all of that needed to be taken care of before we could think about a fair.
In addition to solving the fiscal issues, Abel says the all-new board members had to quickly learn the ropes while managing ongoing events at the fairgrounds, located about 30 miles south of Fairbanks off the Richardson Highway, like the concert last week sponsored by Salcha School, and soccer practice that's held twice weekly in one of the ball fields.
That's the point of the fairground, is to be there for the community and be a place that we can do activities like that.
The Fair Association also wasn't able to stage the event last year. Abel says she thinks that's largely because organizers went too far in trying to make the fair bigger with more rides and other such carnival-type attractions. She thinks that turned away a lot of folks who'd been showing up for the fair over the previous 35 years.
The Salcha Fair had gotten kind of away from the country fair atmosphere. And it was starting to get bigger, and we're kind of wanting to go back to more of the country fair type fair and let the Tanana Valley Fair have their big rides and all of that stuff. We want to be a little different.
Abel says the cost of the fair also was a factor. She says all those additional attractions required the Fair Association to hike the price of admission and tickets to take the rides and play the midway games.
The bigger the fair is, the more they have to charge for you to get in, the more you have to spend while you're in there because everything costs more money. And a lot of people stopped going because it was too expensive for them to take their families, and so then when they got in there, their kids weren't happy because they wanted to do all the things.
Abel says a few years ago, the board rescheduled the fair from late June to late July to accommodate all those new attractions. So the company that provides the Ferris wheel and all the other rides could work in the Salcha Fair before it goes to Delta Junction for the Deltana Fair in late July and to Fairbanks for the Tanana Valley Fair in early August. She says she and the other board members want to de-emphasize the carnival rides and make the Salcha event more like what she calls a country fair that would be held in August.
They used to have the Salcha Fair the end of August. And I think that's because of harvest. People were able to harvest their big vegetables and bring them in and show them off.
Agriculture is big in Salcha, and Abel says she thinks people would be more interested in a fair that offered more ag-related events, like the Deltana Fair, which she and her family often go to.
The tractor pull was our favorite, and the games that they let the kids play beforehand, that actually gave me some of the ideas for the 2016 fair, some of the games that I had out there for the kids to play. And
the Deltana Fair and Music Festival will, as usual, feature many agriculture-related events this year, including its first kids' rodeo, as well as the always popular local 4-H and future Farmers of America's prize-winning livestock show. But the fair also will feature the annual Music Fest and a demolition derby, which was a big hit last year. And it'll also include a lot of carnival rides. In Delta, I'm Tim Ellis.
The state has announced another dipnet opening at Chitna. For the second week in a row, the popular personal-use fishery on the Copper River will open for 84 hours Thursday morning through Sunday evening. Prior to last week, dipnetting was shut down for more than a month due to a very weak early sockeye return. Fish and Game reports that a recent rebound of the run is continuing. Between July 2nd and the 8th, a state sonar counter at the Copper River's mouth tallied over 125,000 salmon, more than double the preseason projection of 51,000 for that time span. A state release announcing this week's opening says the dipnet fishery will continue to be managed on a weekly basis. I'm Dan Bross.